Welcome to the Teaching Journeys podcast, hosted by Dave Roberts. Humanity possesses a unique skill, the ability to pass knowledge from one generation to the next. This podcast embraces that ability, offering learning opportunities through conversations with extraordinary guests. Dave aims to leave a positive mark on individuals around the world. So before you dive into today's episode, please share this podcast with your network, including friends, family, and colleagues. And please consider leaving a rating or review. Your support makes all the difference.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Teaching Journeys podcast. I'm your host, Dave Roberts. And today it is my pleasure to have as my guest, Nina Della Vecchia. Nina is a spiritual life coach, Reiki master practitioner, and energy healer whose mission is to support family caregivers and stressed out individuals to dare to put themselves first by shifting from burnout and feeling isolated to an increased capacity for living and a renewed life perspective to thrive. She walks alongside those who never signed up to be caregivers, but became ones out of love, not training. These unintentional caregivers often face a devastating curveball that changes everything. Nina is here to help them reclaim something just as powerful, themselves. Learning to integrate pockets of joy and harmony into their everyday lives. Rooted in the belief that transformation is possible even when nothing around you changes, Nina blends her training in life coaching, spiritual coaching, Reiki, and archangelic light healing with deeply intuitive guidance. Through her signature hybrid sessions, she creates safe, soul-nurturing spaces where her clients feel seen, held, and empowered to move forward from the inside out. Nina, welcome to the Teaching Journeys podcast. I've been looking forward to our conversation for quite a while now.
Thank you so much, Dave. It's an honor to be here. Thank you.
And due to the joys of LinkedIn and some mutual shared connections, we hooked up. We realized that we aligned on so many levels. And then the next step was for me to invite you to be a guest contributor on the podcast. So here we are at this moment in time.
It really is something, you know, like when you like are part of a group, but then when you meet someone and there's just so many different spaces, joyful ones, and then some difficult ones, things that we share that you wouldn't want to share with anyone, like the type of loss we both have experienced. So it's always comforting when you meet your people. And so I feel like that with you too, for sure.
As we've talked about, life isn't all about happiness and achievement. There's a lot of dark spaces that we have to navigate, but it's the dark spaces that I think in a lot of cases define us more in terms of who we are than the light spaces.
What I often say, especially when a client comes to a session and they're in a rough space, sometimes when people are feeling especially heavy that day, they'll apologize. I'm like, whoa, whoa, whoa. This is typically where the gold is. When things are dark, you talk about in your book, when the psychology professor met the minister, which I love, you talk about shadow work and the shadow. And anytime we go in there, that is, because if everything's happy and good all the time, that is great. And you savor and are grateful for those moments. Those are really important to celebrate. It's when things get dark and hard, that's where the learning comes and the opportunities for growth and transformation and all the things that really make, once you get through, make life a lot more fulfilling. It's unfortunate sometimes it comes that way.
Well, first of all, thank you for your kind comments about our book. And the other thing is that, and I know we mentioned that in the When the Psychology Professor Met the Minister, is that spiritual awareness isn't always pretty. I mean, in order for us to achieve awareness, we have to really make friends with the dark places, the negative experiences that we've had, because that's how we typically grow. And you know, we can grow from the light, but we can also grow from the dark, thereby how the yin and yang came to being. So I'm sure you guide your clients to embrace both the light and the darkness in order to achieve authenticity, maximum growth, and re-engaging in a world with meaning after life-altering challenges.
Absolutely. You know, often when people come to me, it's very difficult for them to see the light, where there's a lot of light going on. Like, for instance, so family caregivers, that's a real passion group for mine. Like, this is someone who's in that space because something has happened to a loved one, or they're in a situation that is their, the care and the life of another person is in their hands, often full time, great portion of their lives. So even for them, it's hard to see the light because the minute that they open their eyes, if they got in much sleep that night, they're on. And it's just obligation, duty, you fill in the blank. And so grief is also very interesting in this space because you're grieving where you are now, because life doesn't look like, you know, this is what each day is such a hardship. If it's been something that's occurred, like a stroke, like brain change, Alzheimer's, whatever, shit that has occurred in that way from a physical standpoint, well, then when you look at the past, it's painful because of all the memories. And then when you look forward, grief. And I remember for me, I had a lot of caregiving. I come from a huge family. So there was caregiving for my parents, my 18-year-old niece who had cancer, and a sister of mine who had epilepsy, where her care was more like driving her places and things like that. But I remember in the throes, so my mom had cancer, my dad had multiple strokes that left him bedridden for 3.5 years. And so I remember, especially in the cancer journeys, because my mom and my niece were fighting cancer at the same time for about 5 and 6 years each. And as you, like, you have, it's such a roller coaster ride. Yeah. Like, there, you're like, oh, okay, this is a good day. All right, okay, we're getting somewhere. And I just remember the day when I had, my mom had really gone through it and she was doing better. And I was like, all right, here we go. Whew. And then this feeling, this reality set, I'm like, well, wait a minute, she's not getting better. She's better today. But truthfully, like, she's going to be dying. Like, she's going to die. We're not going to have like some actual peace, whatever you want to call it, until that happens. And I felt a tremendous amount of guilt, this grief that was like, I'm not going to really have peace until I can grieve and mourn that she's going to be gone. And it was just this, it was an overwhelming, and I didn't have the tools then to navigate this. My tools then were to plow through. You could just keep going.
Back in our day, we did. We plowed through. We were told to suck it up, keep moving. And in today's world, that isn't possible. And particularly when you're talking about really complicated grief that occurs with individuals who are caregivers for their loved ones, you have, and I can speak from my own experience, you have the grief before the actual loss, because you're grieving the loss of that person's autonomy, the loss of that person's spirit, the loss of that person's personality, and you're watching somebody you love dearly waste away, realizing that the outcome is going to be the transition to another existence or death or passing on again, however individuals conceive death. And that's something that I think it's misunderstood with terminal illness. It just isn't the grief after the physical loss. It's the grief that occurs prior to that, that intensifies the grief after the physical loss of that loved one.
They're all of the above. Yes. And then in the space of like when someone has a like post-stroke where they're not who they were, or with Alzheimer's or dementia, that journey could be long. Mm-hmm. And so you're in this space of this complicated grief for who knows how long. And if it's, there's another layer to this, that when it's a spouse, that relationship, that intimacy, what made you husband and wife, or wife and wife, or husband and husband, whatever your relationship is, partner to partner, all of that. So how do I, you know, what comes up and you're grieving that loss, your loved one's there still. They're not at all the person they were. Your soulful relationship, intimate needs, like, are no longer either. So there's another layer, type of grief there too.
Absolutely. And just to stay with this theme for a second, in your coaching service, Dare to Be Me Coaching, what is your approach to helping and holding space for others who are experiencing challenges from grief and loss? And can you tell our audience how your own personal experiences as a caregiver have informed that approach?
Sure. Thank you. When people come to me, or often, you know, they're so depleted. So they're operating from a place of exhaustion, right? And so today, especially, we all, especially, operate from full plates. Mm-hmm. Usually it's overfilled. So with my clients is that they learn that they start to be able to expand their capacity, increase their bandwidth. It's like, okay, the thought of scraping anything off that plate is not even in their realm of consciousness at that time. They're already overfilled. So in this phase, how can we expand where you are right now? Often being a family caregiver is extremely isolating. You know, unless someone else has been in your shoes, they can't get it. I see my clients will be conflicting with that. You can't be mad at them, because it's like, you don't want people to know where you're at, because that means they've never had to experience that to this point. Great. But when they're there, so they feel seen, they get an opportunity to say anything. Yep. It is a safe space to put out there, even when it sounds, when they're, you know, their darkest of what they feel like is a secret, that they can share that. I've been working with this a little bit, because it's like, why would I want to work with a spiritual life coach and an energy healer? You would think therapists or social workers, people like that. How would someone like me be able to support? All of this really stems down to their energy. And so what's their energy? Your energy is your life force. It is, everyone, you can say, I have low energy today, high energy today. So by working together, we start little by little finding those pockets. Where can that spark be? Just often just saying it, and that they can breathe. So they don't even realize they haven't breathed really in a while. They're so disconnected from themselves. So they get this opportunity to connect to themselves, to regain their energy, to increase their capacity. I talk a lot about perspective. This is like a reimagining of caregiving, because often when we think of caregiving, a lot of the resources that are available to help a caregiver is how to help them be better of service to their loved one, which is super important to understand brain change, to understand whatever it is that their loved one is going through, so they can realize, okay, I've been speaking to them this way, their brain has changed to a certain point, we can't, that this isn't working anymore, so now it's time for me to change. All very important. All of that is very taxing on the person who has the patience, who is navigating all of that. So clients often have like the big calendar, and that calendar is usually full of doctor's appointments, medications. And I'll say, so tell me on your calendar, where is time for you? Like, time for you. And if they say, well, you know, this is when I'll go take a shower, I'm like, and usually it's not there.
No.
So what's been evolving is my sessions have gone more of a hybrid approach of spiritual life coaching and Reiki, the energy healing. And I've been starting to call, you know, energy healing, because that's what it is. Mm-hmm. Is that they are able to gain this perspective, regain some fertile ground, because they've been operating from such a point of exhaustion and depletion. They can go through their day by routine. And it's this daring to put themselves first, which seems completely counterintuitive to being a really, truly wonderful caregiver. And to really realize, by daring to put yourself first, it's that, you know, that same analogy when you're on the airplane, put your oxygen mask on first, and then you tend to your children, because you need to be able to breathe to give them life. It is the same thing. So in this space of And this with the spiritual part, that is wherever the person is. So I wouldn't consider myself faith-based. However, if someone comes and that's where they're operating from, that it is their devout faith, that is where they get service, where they do find capacity, great, we're going to work with that. Wherever somebody is, we will meet them where they are. And then as their energy, they start to increase some capacity. As they start to reimagine and see, well, if I put myself first, I'm not so frustrated with my husband, with my wife, asking for help. That is such a huge one. And we, you know, journey to find like, well, what does help look like? That I often use the analogy of like, you have different wells. Mm-hmm. One well could be family, could be specific people, could be your church group, could be neighbor. And maybe some's only 10% filled, 20%. Some are overfilled where there are people that just show up. And so whatever is available, getting to that receiving, that space, and that you don't owe anybody anything, that you're in a space to receive because of your circumstances. And there are many people, and I think you're a person like this. Do you enjoy helping people?
Well, sure.
Right. Like it fills you up. That's why so many people volunteer. I mean, I think anyone who's an avid volunteer will tell you it's probably more about yourself than it is about who you're serving. Like you're thrilled mm-hmm. to serve, but you're filling your cup. And so this is allowing others to support you. I do these hybrid sessions where we, through different spiritual processing, sometimes it's strictly like I'm certified in life coaching and spiritual life coaching. Any tool that I have is available to a client. And I'm a facilitator. So my clients come to me, as you know, with coaching, it comes from within. So what I support someone to do is to find it. And often they end up discovering more than they had ever anticipated and then end up regaining energy and clarity and direction and this self-love and asking for help more than they ever did before things change for them. Because often we don't even spend that much time on ourselves like that. We're usually giving. It's been this hybrid approach. It's a more holistic and this working from the inside out. I'm one of nine children. I'm the seventh of nine. My parents had, they started their family, were Italian immigrants. They had an arranged marriage in Italy, and they immigrated to the U.S. in the early 50s, and they had all their kids. I'm from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. So they had us all there. My dad had multiple strokes. First one was in his, I think it was like mid-50s. It was the last few that really impacted his health, where he was bedridden and on a feeding tube. So we went from this, you know, diapers, from this man who was this macho, you know, Italian immigrant construction worker type of guy to fully incapacitated. And my mom became his full-time caregiver. She had had her own business and it really wasn't, and she had a restaurant, and it really wasn't until he was pretty far off that she was no longer in denial that her life was now going to change. And, you know, I have a big family and these are all, we all very strong personalities, and there was a big riff. We all disagreed on this care. And so lots of us, you know, number of us started speaking to each other for a little while, arguments. It was all the things that can happen when you're under this immense amount of pain and confusion, because you don't know, you know, a lot of the hospital part of it, you're navigating. My dad was sent home a couple of times after a couple of strokes, and we're like, what do we do with him? He started speaking in Italian all the time, which I didn't understand Italian. He would say, take me home. And he meant Italy, not his house, which he hadn't been there in almost 50 years. So it was friends who were a friend of ours who was like, you can get him in a rehab facility. No one had mentioned that. So you're navigating, you're thrown into advocacy as well, like trying to advocate for your loved one. So he passed away. It was a 3-year journey with him. And then he passed away in the year 2000. And within 6 months, my mom was diagnosed with stage 4 metastatic colon cancer. She had gotten an abnormal test and they wanted her to come back in for a colonoscopy and she ignored it. And so here we were back in the throes of now we're on this cancer journey with my mom. And then in January, February, my 13-year-old niece was diagnosed with osteosarcoma, so bone cancer. And this is one will be harder for me. She was the only daughter of one of my sisters, my second oldest, and I was at the time working with my sister. So this kid was like my kid. And that is, to date, the most heinous thing I've ever been through. A pediatric oncology unit, it's too much. And so I would spend the nights with her when she was in for treatments, and we just went on a 5-year battle journey, you know, with her. Right in the midst of all that. And so that was 2001. In 2003, my 40-year-old sister had epilepsy and was something that came later in life in like her late 20s. And she passed away in her sleep, died suddenly at 40. She'd been going through a divorce from her high school sweetheart. So they said, you know, the autopsy showed that it was a grand mal seizure that she just couldn't wake up from. She was living with my mom at the time, who's, you know, in her cancer journey, and my sister doesn't wake up. And I'll always say that she died of a broken heart because I don't think she could have ever pictured herself getting divorced. And she didn't have children. I say all that to say we had a run. It was about 10 years that every time the phone rang, you would just be like, oh, God, what is it now? So you're in this state of consistent trauma. And it took, I don't even know how many years before where the phone would ring and I wouldn't have this, you know, reaction. We had a lot of healing to do as a family. And so during that time, in my own personal journey, I didn't know I was grieving. So here, you know, we're in it. We're between hospitals, doctors are trying to save lives. We had done alternative cancer therapies. We went to Germany for both my mom and my niece. Like, that would be a whole, like, volume of podcast to explain, like, to share, like, everything we all did. So, for me, personally, after that time, so in 2006 is when my niece passed away, actually the same month your daughter did. So my niece passed away March 31st of 2006, and my mom died August 17 of 2006. And I turned my life upside down, like the few years after, not realizing that I was grieving and mourning. And I had dissolved a long-term relationship, met and married the rebound, who was not a good person for me. I went and made all kinds of choices. And I'm a pretty grounded, level-headed person doing uncharacteristic things. And it was through, like, my own personal crises where I finally got into therapy and then started working on all. And that wasn't until 2009. And then I became a certified coach in 2014. And I just was, like I do, plow through, do your thing, not realizing that by all that I was doing for myself was a space where I could help others. And so my therapist, who had been my therapist for a while, had suggested, I had a longtime sales career, and she had suggested that I become a life coach. And I was like, have you met me? I'm like, you can't go. And she said, yeah, I met someone who rises to challenge, who digs and does her work and has this amazing support system. And I was like, well, yeah, I'm lucky I have all these people. She's like, you have them because that's you too. And yeah, you've been there for them. And realizing, like, who you have company with, it's because that's who you are too. So that was kind of the beginning. But the awareness really didn't come. I supported people and I was coaching on the side. I kept my job. And then it was about 2022, that was a big turning point for me personally that has me sitting here right now. So I don't know if you want to end, because I could keep talking.
Well, that is quite a nutshell when you talk about your experiences. But I mean, just listening, And I think there's a lot of more value as a podcast host and as a coach of listening as opposed to talking. So I like to create those spaces where I can just listen and absorb, but I can see where your experiences, you know, watching other individuals and your family caregiver, you directly have informed your coaching practice because you are so focused on, let's get you out of the caregiver piece. Let's find out who you are personally. Let's translate some of those caregiving skills you had in others to yourselves so that you could find your voice. Because like you said, you just kept plowing through everything because that's all you knew. And as a caregiver, you plow through. It's like, okay, we've gotten plowed through this crisis. Let's plow through another crisis. And where one of the aspects of your story where it really resonated with was with your niece, because my daughter transitioned at the age of 18 due to another form of sarcoma, velar rhabdomyosarcoma, which was a connective muscle tissue sarcoma. Mm-hmm. And I also resonated with how you saw your niece. You didn't see her just as a niece. You saw her as a daughter. And that's one of the things that we need to be aware of when we're holding space for individuals who are grieving, is we have to take a look at what was the significance of the relationship. They may have lost a best friend, but that best friend might have been a brother, like a brother or a sister, an extension of their family. Your niece was more like a daughter. So we have to treat the grief journey from the perspective of how that individual viewed the relationship, not just the biological relationship. And I can see where all of your experiences growing up in your family have kind of shaped where you are now as a coach and why you are very good at what you do because of that.
Thank you.
And I think some of the best life coaches have been informed by their own experiences anyway. And that's how we help. We hold space for others. That's how we can serve others, because we've been through our own stuff. And that informs us in terms of how we want to hold space for others.
I appreciate that. And your listening piece is, I think, absolutely right. Giving someone that space. And so clients really get heard when they come. And I appreciate what you said, too, about the relationship. If someone's caring for their spouse, that's just how to navigate that journey. And I think for me, it's knowing that people are at home suffering, where with some support, this is big. Asking for help is such a big piece where some people don't want to admit that they need help navigating until they get it. And then like my clients can't wait for their sessions. Mm-hmm. They don't dread them. They're super excited to come because they have been experiencing, they know what's going to empower them, that it's going to give some direction, some clarity, and that how. It's one of my greatest weeks is getting pictures from a client who's on a trip where they left their loved one at home with care. Mm-hmm. And scheduled a trip for themselves. And I'm getting pictures all week of all that they're doing on this trip. And something they could have never imagined doing. Is there a little bit of guilt? Some, maybe a little, but again, they know this is a place where they can land if that any of that surfaces. And a big part of what that an outcome often when we dare to put ourselves first to be there for our loved ones in certain situations, like this particular client could then see without being there how much their loved one could actually do. Mm-hmm. They flexed their independence because this caregiver was there and they would normally just sort of bounce it off to their, you know, to this caregiver, their family member. And then my client was like, I didn't know they could do all of that. I'm going to let them do more. So ultimately, what has been such a beautiful outcome is that the loved one themselves find they rediscover a lot for themselves too. Often the relationships get better because their caregiver doesn't resent them so much, doesn't mm-hmm. feel so obligated, has some energy for them because it's not everything they're doing is just duty-based.
Yeah.
Or where they can actually engage and have conversations. So, and that was something that really was like, if I can, you know, like bring that to someone, like have them have some change, because their life, their situations aren't changing anytime soon. And in some cases, they're going to get worse, right? They're going to, but that they've, and they're also getting their own tools. That's another part of my work. And that's if someone comes as a caregiver, like typically when people come see me, they're in some throes of hardship, or they're having like a spiritual, they're in an awakening. They don't quite know what it is. They're having some other like inner conflict. And like you said earlier, often like a spiritual awakening's messy. It's not all unicorns and like all that, right? Like all, usually that's what it is. So when they come, they're in that space. And so what's so beautiful is that they're able to change and start to progress, even if nothing around them does. This perspective, they're just getting more opportunities and outcomes that they never envisioned could even be possible. Mm. I'm just willing to like lean in, be like, let's see
where it goes. Let's see where it goes, and let's see where it takes us, and you know, let both of our intuitions be our guide.
Yes, it's about discovering your tools, what works, what doesn't, what, because ideally people aren't going to be working with me forever. It's for them to find it within themselves, and that this is long-term support for themselves and a tool bag that they can access and that continues to grow, that they're given the tools to sustain themselves regardless of what's going on around them. So I really feel a tremendous amount of commitment to my clients to provide that to them and help them discover those tools.
Yeah, I have no doubt, because you are very committed and very passionate about what you do to help others transcend challenge, other caregivers, other individuals who are going through difficulties. How did the name Dare to Be Me Coaching come up? What inspired that? And what is your mission? I know you've talked about the services, a lot of the services that you offer to your clients, but let's focus on what inspired the name, what is the mission, and what can I expect if I'm a client coming to you for assistance, for services, what can I expect?
My mission is to help people in the throes of hardship regain their energy, increase their capacity, reimagine their perspective so that they can have a happier and more fulfilling life exactly where they're at, that they can change no matter what's going on around them. That's my mission. And whatever brings them to me, that's what we're going to do. All my work has been very divinely guided. And I went through my own health care situation in 2022. From 2021 to 2022, I was going through a spiritual awakening and didn't know. So I'm an outside sales rep. I'm selling cabinetry and driving for work, averaging about 2,800 miles a month. And I start listening to a podcast that's a spiritually and I don't know why I'm listening to it. It's kind of weird. It's kind of out there, but I can't stop listening. Fast forward to 2022. So at the end of 2021, I go for a promotion at work. I have a new love in my life. I'm single. Promotion, looks like I'm going to get the job. Looks like 2022 is going to be all different. By the end of January, there is no job to have. They gave it to someone who already had the position, who just wanted to move. And by the end of February, he's gone. So that falls apart. I am distraught. So at that point, and I had done lots of therapy. I had done lots of coaching my own. But this time, I have family members who do plant medicine, who have gone on retreats and doing plant medicine ceremonies. Ayahuasca was the plant medicine. And I knew they'd been like for about 4 years. And I was like, that's great for you, not for me. And all I felt was, this is the time. And actually, the person I had dated, people show up in our lives and maybe they're not the person for your long haul, but they have purpose. And this person did two things for me, and I'm still grateful to him. And I always send him good gratitude energy. One was a reason why I went ahead and decided to do ayahuasca for the first time. And also, he's post Neil Peart's death, he was this guy that it was a big influence on why I like discovered Rush, really, but specifically Neil. So I know we'll get back to that. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I had my first plant medicine ceremony, April 2022, and that was life-changing. For me, that's still to this day my deep dive work. And because what the plants do or that particular medicine does for me, I get lots of insights. I had already been going inward, but some channeling, like stuff was already happening. So April 2022, I go my first plant medicine ceremony. Our facilitator did song dedications, and one that they intuitively picked for each of us. And my second ceremony, it was called Dare to Be Me. And it was like, stand up, be who you are, you know? And so when it was time to launch my business, I actually used AI for some help. I was trying to come up with the name, and I put in all different things, one of which was that song. And when that came up, it was like, that's it. Because that, to me, really, to be able to have a fulfilling, happy life, what pockets of joy, and I say pockets of joy when it comes to people in hardship, and that's really any of us. No one's in a perpetual state of joy. That's not even attainable. So pockets of joy by daring to be me and speaking your truth and discovering, if you're not sure what that is, we're going to figure that out into something that feels good, not feel like to not have guilt and shame around that, but something that works for you. So that's where the name came from. What will someone experience when they come to me? Mm-hmm. So really what they're going to experience is, one of my clients say it best, often is like, I don't think I could say anything that will shock you. I knew I could come and tell you this and you wouldn't think I was crazy. I provide a space that when someone comes and they are seeking respite, support, clarity, is there another way, hope, healing, when they come, they're going to get a safe and sacred space to explore, to be seen, to be heard, and to be given the opportunity to rediscover themselves, probably more than they ever had before. And that's going to come from the inside out. Mm-hmm. I recently had a dear friend of mine who was very responsible for the space that I am working, because when I launched my practice, it was going to be resilience coaching. And when I told her what I was doing, I was like, I'm getting back into my coaching. There's going to be a spiritual component because of what I've been through, and it's going to be resilience. She's been battling lung cancer for several years. And she's like, well, what about people like me? She said, I'm getting free therapy right now through an organization. She's like, you know this world. What about people like us? And as soon as she said that, I was like, I want to serve people that are in this illness, hard space, hardship. In this, like, even for me, I was in a hard space in my own dark night of the soul. Mm-hmm. And in July of 2022, I had a relapse of vertigo from a car accident I was in 2001. And I went down. I couldn't drive. I couldn't look at screens. I couldn't work. I couldn't read. I couldn't walk around my apartment. And now I needed caregiving. I had my first panic attack. I haven't had one since. I thought I was going to die. I called 911. The paramedics came, confirmed I had a panic attack. I thought, you know, I'm in this vertigo, like vertigo goes away, because I would have like little bouts of it. And by the next day, it was okay. This was 5 days in and it wasn't getting better. So I was in that state just like that for about 3 months. Mm-hmm. And then got into rehab. To this day, I still go to rehab every 3 weeks. It's something I have to navigate and manage. It's very clear what my regimen is so that I can do what I'm doing right now. It's something that I can have an episode and have to cancel my day. When that happened to me, I was that day that I called the paramedics, I was screaming after they left. I was just devastated. And I was yelling all the things I couldn't do. I can't read. And I was yelling out loud, I can't drive, I can't work. And I just screamed, what am I supposed to do? And I heard as clear as day, go inward. Like, to the point it was so loud, it jolted me. Mm. And I was like, what? Like, go inward. And I sat there And the first thing that popped up was that podcast I've been listening to in 2021. And that teacher, am I allowed to say the name? If not, that's okay. Yeah. That's so fine. It's because I really am so grateful to him. It's Michael Sandler, and his podcast is Inspire Nation. Mm-hmm. And he had two courses, an automatic writing course, and he had his School of Mystics. And I was like, well, if it's writing on paper, I think I can start. I was starting to be able to do that. So I bought that course and I joined his class. And I was like, I don't know what I'm doing here. I'm like, but I'm just going to go. It's the only thing that came. Little did I know. So in the automatic writing, which is intuitive writing, I started. So this was my healing journey. And I was like rehabilitating, you know, people. I thank God for the people that at my church, I had neighbors, all kinds of people stepped up to help me because I couldn't, you know, take care of myself. That was very humbling to have to receive. So there I am. And then I'm working on all this. Well, fast forward, you know, I launched my practice in 2024. So I'm 16 months in. And I wrote an article about this. I posted it on LinkedIn. It was From Sales to Spirituality, When Your Pivot is a Leap. And I leapt because it was like through spirit was like, your life as you know it is over. This is what you're doing. And what I didn't anticipate is that through the plant medicine work, through the automatic writing, that all of this was going to show up in my coaching sessions and my energy healing sessions. So I'm Reiki 3 certified. Even after Reiki 1, I had an opportunity to start working with people. Insights were coming in and they were coming fast. And my one facilitator or shaman, and I said that, I was like, it's all coming. And, you know, so I'm 52, I'll be 53 this year. So this was around 50, 51. He said, it's coming fast. You're finally awake. So we're just going to start having all the messaging coming through because I've been just not in tune like that. So once I opened it, so with that intuition, I had been working with for me, and now it's really showing up for clients, like even to, so I can be in a, so I call it, I'm in a co-creation. So when a client comes to me, I'm in co-creation. They're getting me, my spirit team, my tools. And what happens for them is that they start to experience their higher self, tap into their inner wisdom, to their inner voice. And what has been another level of this, their loved one that they're caring for is in a space where they have had brain change. Well, maybe their physical body has changed, but their higher self is still there too. So clients, by expanding that perspective and tapping into their own inner wisdom and inner voice, being more comfortable and whatever that is, some people it's prayer, if it is God, whatever connects you, but they're now then able to see their loved one as like a spiritual being beyond what the change has been. And that has been really life-changing because they're having moments where it's like, gosh, I felt like, you know, we were husband and wife again. Mm-hmm. It wasn't just me doing all the duties. Like I actually could engage again because I know they're more than what, where they are now.
Yeah. And I think, you know, the opportunity to go within, and we can realize that by going within, all the answers we need are inside of us anyway. If we quiet the mind, we go within, the path that we need to take becomes clearer. But if we have all this inner talk going on in our head at the same time, we're trying to be quiet and be still, it's not going to work. I think there also sounds like you do is you let individuals explore, you empower them to explore. And they might say, you know, I want to explore plant medicine. I want to explore Reiki. I want to explore nature. I want to explore ecotherapy. I want to explore sound healing, provide whatever tools in a toolbox that they need, allow them to explore, and then see where else they want to go as a result of that, with empowering them in the process to say, okay, now that you've discovered this about yourself, you've discovered this tool, where else do you want to go? And for individuals who have been caregivers all of their lives, to have somebody ask them, what is it that you need, as opposed to worrying about what everybody else's needs, that is, I think, a powerful paradigm shift for them.
Yes, thank you for that reflection, 100%. And one thing I just wanted to add a little bit, when you were talking about going within and quieting the mind, so many people say, like, if you tell me I have to meditate for 20 minutes, forget it, because my mind's too noisy. So I'm very big on alternatives to meditate, like how to integrate meditation with where you are now, even if your mind is noisy. Like, you don't have to go and be a yogi and sit there for 20 minutes. Sometimes it's meditating while you're washing dishes. Could it be meditating while you're doing laundry? Things like that.
Absolutely. There's various forms of meditation. There's walking meditations. For me, when I meditate, I'll get on the elliptical or the bike and I'll put on my favorite music. And I just
love it.
I get off to a good start for the day when I've exercised and I got the endorphins going. So for me, those are my forms of meditation. I'm a person that has a great deal of difficulty doing meditation in the traditional sense, in terms of just sitting and being quiet. And for me, sometimes a 10-minute meditation might be all I need. So you mentioned Neil Peart, and this is one of the things that I had to talk about, because during our introductory call before for the podcast, we both found another point of synchronicity is our love for not only Rush, the Hall of Fame Canadian rock band, but for at least my favorite drummer, my favorite lyricist, my favorite just all-around human being in the music world, Neil Peart. And so I want to ask you specifically how he's inspired you through your spiritual journey. And I'll reflect a little bit when you're done about his wisdom.
Well, I was really connected to him post his death. He had already passed by the time I was really introduced to the magic that is Neil Peart. So it started with, you know, listening to the music, learning that he was the lyricist, like the drummer writes. I bought Ghost Rider. I haven't read it yet. For me, what happened was he was showing up in my channeling. Part of my practice is in the morning, and I call in my angels, my spirit team, and it's a ritual for me. And there was one day he would start showing up and coming through. And I know things, and plant medicines really helped me. In addition to the automatic writing, I can sense an energy. So I'll know who it is, not so much that I can see them, but I will get an energy. And I was like, you keep showing up. So one day he was really showing up. And I was like, wait a minute. I was like, is it your birthday? And I looked up and it was. I was like, well, happy birthday. When I channel in the mornings, I call on him, Taylor Hawkins, which I think I share with you, who was the drummer for the Foo Fighters.
Yep.
And I remember you saying when Rush was inducted into the Hall of Fame, I think Taylor was one of the, or you told me whenever Taylor either redid one of his songs, something where Taylor, I think, I'm pretty sure.
I think what he did is he sat in. I think that might have been when Neil Peart was on hiatus after the tragedies in his life.
Correct. Yeah.
I think Taylor Hawkins sat in and they did one Rush to Tom Sawyer when Geddy Lee and Alex Lifeson were performing Tom Sawyer. So Hawkins was a drummer, I think stand-in drummer at that point.
Okay. And I'm pretty sure they're the ones when that Rush got inducted to the Hall of Fame, that they were the ones that introduced them. So, and then in my plant medicine ceremonies, the drums really, really resonate for me. And to know and like to see what Neil, the loss of his wife, tragic loss of his daughter, both. And then what he had and what the journey he went on. And so I believe he's a spirit guide of mine. I know he is. I get insight and guidance from him and being able to put himself back in such a public way, although he always did it on his terms.
Yep.
I know he gives me a lot of strength to do that because I'm not conventional. I've never really been. And then anytime I've tried to be conventional, it really doesn't work. Although there's a very practical side to me as well, in addition to this spiritual. So he has really shown up and given a lot of affirmation to be like that, regardless of what has happened, look, and that you can really live life on your terms, even when you've come from such pain. His energy has such a, oh my gosh, I think his soul is just so old.
Yeah, like, I always sensed that he was a visionary. And, I alluded to him, Patty and I alluded to him, and when the psychology professor met the minister, just being a visionary. And for me, I found out about Neil Peart through one of my students who was a big Rush fan along with her family, and said, you got to read Ghost Rider. And when I read his story, so much of what he said and his wisdom just resonated. Things like, keep moving, something will come up. I needed to figure out what kind of a person I wanted to be in, the kind of world that I wanted to live in, which anybody who has experienced life-altering tragedy, that's their goal, about the innate will to survive, about his take on forgiveness, which to me is one of the more profound pieces I ever heard about forgiveness, and was something that I was struggling with after my daughter transitioned. And he talked about forgiveness as being, there would be no life for me, no peace for me, unless I learned to forgive life for what it had done to me, forgive others for being alive, and eventually forgive myself for being alive. And that was powerful for me because
there.
I would always ask myself, why am I still here and my daughter isn't? What made the universe want me to live and take my child? I realize now that obviously the challenges I've had have allowed me to find my greater purpose. But at the time, I was having trouble forgiving myself for being alive. And questioning why other people who I didn't think were as worthy as my daughter were still alive. But then eventually, once I got through my own stuff with that, I was able to realize that, hey, I did the best I could given the hand of cards that were dealt to me. And all of his work, songs, his ghostwriter, his fiction work, all of that has inspired me. It's inspired my writing. It's inspired my philosophy. And I quote him in my Death, Dying, and Bereavement course specifically, and recommend his books to anybody and his music to anybody that cares to explore. So that was another positive in the checklist for you when I found out that you were a Neil Peart and Rush fan. And he continues to inspire me. And he is probably the only celebrity that transition that I truly grieve for, that truly affected me. Because I felt that he was so much a part of my growth, and I never met him.
Yeah.
And, you know, his writing still inspires me, and the person he is still inspires me.
That was, you know, that was beautiful, and just how you, like, what's coming, it was like you're, like, a part of his legacy. Like, he left this legacy, and by you quoting and sharing and having this conversation, all that you do, and you do multiple times reference Neil in your book. Like that, and just that, like the gifts that come through. It's what's so wild for me is how much he supports me. This is in transition is when he's come into my life, which, so thank you. Thank you for what you do, who you are, Dave, and how you hold that space for all of us. And then you bring to us all of your wisdom, the wisdom of Neil, and any of your tools and all of your training and all in your experiences. Thank you.
Well, likewise for you too. I think, you know, we attract those individuals in our lives who resonate with how it is we want to put ourselves out there in the world, the tracks that we want to leave in this world. And we're going to attract people living and transitioned who are going to align with that. And they become part of our earthly family and our soul family.
Yeah, beautiful. Well stated.
One of my last questions for you, and we can go on probably for another hour, which means if we have enough for another hour, then we have to have you back for a follow-up podcast.
Anytime you say. Thank you.
You're welcome. But if you could leave our listeners with one thing today, the ultimate takeaway, what would that be, Nina?
As long as you are breathing, you can have change. You can change. Never too old. It's never too far gone. It's never too stuck. It is not over. And you can change and have a happy, fulfilling, you can bring it in. No matter where you are, and get help doing so. If you don't believe that, call somebody, find the person, bring them in, and you can have it.
Thank you. That's wise advice. We should be able to fully give to ourselves and value ourselves enough to ask for help when we need it and allow ourselves to be on the receiving end of caregiving.
I mean, 100%. Obviously, that's where I'm at with it, for sure. And that is very hard to do on your own.
Yeah. And there's always been a stigma attached to asking for help. And it shouldn't be. We can't operate by ourselves. We can't exist in isolation. And this is going to lead me to, before I ask you the last question, one of my favorite sayings or passages from a Neil Peart and Rush song called Entre Nous, which it's basically that we are all islands to each other, building hopeful bridges on a troubled sea. And that always resonates for me. And what that tells me is about the power of community, about the power there is in being connected to others who not only want to help, but understand your struggles because they've been there themselves.
Beautiful.
So my last question for you, and it's going to give you an opportunity to promote yourself and your services a little bit. If individuals want to find out more about you, find out about Dare to Be Me Coaching, contract for your services, what's the best way for them to do that?
Thank you. So my website's Dare to Be Me Coaching, all spelled out, daretobemecoaching.com. I am on Facebook and Instagram. I'm on LinkedIn as Nina Della Vecchia. All my contact information is on my website. I'm very open to whatever is comfortable. I do have an introductory discovery call as well. Texting, messaging through any of those platforms, whatever is comfortable, I'm available.
That sounds good. And I'll make sure all of your contact information gets in on the episode notes when our podcast goes live on YouTube and my other podcast platforms. Nina, thank you so much for taking time out of your day to spend with me today. As always, I enjoy our conversations and I look forward to more.
Oh my gosh. Thank you so much, Dave. Complete honor. And yeah, thrilled to be connected. And I just appreciate you and all that you have done. Your family, just all of it. So thank you. This was great.
You're welcome. And thank you for your kind comments about when the psychology professor met the minister and, you know, for your support of it. It means a lot to us.
Oh, can I say what I told you before we recorded, that, you know, when you binge watch something, you like savor the last episodes because you're like, I don't want it to be over. That's how I was with your book, that I didn't want it to be over because it was just... so it spoke to me. It was so helpful. Anyone that's in any kind of space that we talked about today, I just think they're going to like that uplift and the tools that you provide and the insight that you and Patty provide through your very personal journey could resonate and just help so many people, millions, really. And so thank you.
You're welcome. And that's our hope, that our book gets into the hands of as many people as possible that need it and will benefit from it. And we throw that intention out to the universe every day.
So, and I will too.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You're welcome. And with that, that is a wrap on another episode of the Teaching Journeys podcast. I'm your host, Dave Roberts, wishing you peace.